And tonight we will talk about vampires. Father Sebastian back with us on Coast to Coast. Get ready for this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Father Sebastian, perhaps the most central personality of the modern vampire subculture, joining the community in 1992, considered to be one of the most influential figures on modern vampirism, and his contributions in the areas of philosophy, spirituality, fang-making, and nightlife. He's also an avid lover of vampire mythology, steampunk wolves, history, 19th century art, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Father Sebastian, how are you?
I'm wonderful, and you?
Good. Good to have you with us again. You've been busy these days, I hear.
I have. Very busy.
Red veils out, purple veils coming out in a few months, huh?
Correct. And it's a lot of pleasure to be able to write books. It's especially in this day of, you know, media.
Oh,
it's really interesting with Kindles and all this stuff coming out.
It really is. Let's go back a little bit, Father. Those who might not have heard you when you were with me back a year or so ago, your interest in vampirism, how did that all start for you?
It was my mom. She got me into it.
How'd she do that?
I remember when I was a kid, she was very interested in the supernatural and paranormal, and I watched shows like Unsolved Mysteries and In Search Of, and these things we would watch together. And I remember being in the kitchen, and she told me Tom Cruise was losing weight to be in a movie, and he was going to play a vampire. And that's what introduced me to Anne Rice, who I guess you just interviewed a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a thrill, too. So, you know, this is a topic that really I just love to digest. Well, maybe I shouldn't say it like that. but vampirism, what is it? What is the modern vampire, Father?
Well, the thing is that there's so many interpretations, and you have to respect all the different perspectives, and that's the most important thing to do. Being a fangsmith, which means I make custom fangs, I get to actually meet people in person almost every day who either love vampires, feel that they live as a vampire, or they just want to wear fangs because it's a symbol for them to bring out something that's inside.
You know, I go ahead.
I've categorized kind of four main categories. One of the four is fans. Like, you know, you have your Anne Rice fans and your Twihards and your Buffy fans and Dracula fans.
Yeah.
But those are fans, like, you know, vampiric Trekkies in a way. So, and with this whole new generation, I've been at a Vampire Diaries convention and a Twilight convention. And may I say they're two very different fan bases, but they're still vampire girls.
That's,
you know,
right.
These girls love these characters. And it's very interesting to see that compared to Anne Rice fans or Buffy fans. They're like different tribes in this one fan category. But they're not really living a vampire lifestyle. They love they love the characters that they're looking to up to. And then I've discovered that there's three base types of, you know, people who live a vampire lifestyle or identify as vampires. And these three are very different from each other. They're almost as different as night and day. And the reason why they're all called vampires is because of their connection to the archetype and its various expressions. And the vampire archetype is an extremely versatile and enduring concept in our culture because it doesn't stop. It started in ancient Sumeria, and it's turning into sparkly vampires in Twilight.
It sure
incredible,
is.
And everything in between.
Do you find that people who are practicing vampirism are generally nice people, or is there something evil about them?
You know what? That's a very good question, because the majority of people that I've met, because I meet these people in person every day, and I mean, I literally, they open their mouths for me.
Yeah. You're like the vampire dentist, aren't you?
I've been called that at times.
Yeah.
I get to basically spend an hour with each person. And Halloween, people travel all over the world to come get fangs from me on Halloween. I just had a girl fly from Moscow to Germany to meet me. Had another kid come from Brazil, waited 4 years to get his teeth. I think he's listening tonight.
Wow.
And I built this guy's story was incredible, how he got his teeth. But I think we should get into that a little bit later in the show.
Okay.
Because basically the three types of vampires that I've encountered, okay, are living vampires, psychic vampires, and sanguine vampires. And they're, I mean, literally there is night and day. Now, I'm a living vampire, which means it's a philosophy for me and kind of a path. So I use the vampire archetype to empower me on an esoteric and spiritual level. And then there's the psychic vampires, which come in basically two categories. You can get a lot deeper. And the psychic vampire tribe is incredibly huge. I mean, there's so many different types. But the first one that is public, which I call a traditional psyvamp, is your traditional psychic vampire, like in Dion Fortune's book, Psychic Self-Defense, or Anton LaVey's book, The Satanic Bible.
Yes. Okay.
In this, it describes an emotionally deficient or damaged individual that creates drama in his or her social circle, or latches on the people and drains them emotionally. And that's your traditional psychic vampire, and what you would think of as most people would encounter psyvamps. I stay with Hare Krishnas around Halloween in New York City, who are neighbors with the Hells Angels. And it's very interesting to hear them talk about prana leeches, which are the same thing.
That's right.
So the whole situation that occurs is that psychic vampires, these specific type of psychic vampires, the majority of them don't even interact in the vampire culture. They don't even know what they are. And they're in everyday life. And I'm sure we've met them
and, or we've run away from them, you know, because they exhaust us just when we're next to them.
That's right. And most of them don't even identify with the vampire culture. Very few of them actually do. And then there's psychic vampires, which I call ethical psychic vampires, who are actually aware of what they are and are trying to live with it and maintain themselves. And they're pretty, they're spending a lot of effort trying to maintain themselves, but it's very different from a living vampire who's empowered by being a vampire and the archetype and the lifestyle and the philosophy and has traditions and culture. Well, the psychic vampire is mainly about the energy issue of an energy deficiency or emotional deficiency. So it's a condition versus a lifestyle. And then, of course, you have your third type, which is a stereotypical blood drinker. And these are individuals that, for whatever reason, feel they have the need to drink human blood to maintain their mental, physical, and spiritual health.
I just had a story about a woman who has drank about 2 liters of human blood, almost every month. Unbelievable. Yeah. That's a lot.
It's very, very dangerous. And the thing is there's no psychic, there's no actual scientific or psychological evidence that is, you know, professionally accumulated that says that someone needs to drink blood. So this is really something that comes from their own perspective, the individuals.
Right.
So, I'm not a supporter of blood drinking, but I am a supporter of people's freedom to do as they want as long as it's safe, sane, and consensual.
Mm-hmm.
And so passing judgment on the people that do that is, it's not something I do, but it's definitely something I discourage people to do because I'm working in people's mouths as a dental technician and in the same industry as a tattoo artist because a lot of what I do works in body mod industry. Like I work in tattoo parlors and piercing shops. So the safety regulations, I have to be educated on how to, you know, be sterile and clean and I'm not piercing people or breaking people's skin like a tattoo artist would. So I have less risk, but I still am dealing with something that I need to take a health and medical approach to. So when I see people telling me about their drinking blood, I mean, I try to stay away from that as much as possible personally.
Now, the people who drink the blood,
mm-hmm.
Is that a big community?
It's not as common as you think. There are people that are very serious about it. It's not a huge community. There's more psychic vampires than living vampires, of course, because it's just simply the availability of getting the blood is a lot more difficult because you got to make, I mean, you got to really do it. The only time that I think that it's actually even reasonably safe is in a couple. And when you've both been tested, and I mean, you can have HIV remain contagious and in your blood for up to 10 years without being any evidence of it being positive or anything like that. So there's really no way to protect yourself. It's not like sex where you can, you know, practice safe sex. And blood drinking is simply something that is just highly risky no matter who you are or what you do. And living vampires don't practice blood drinking because they're about immortality, and blood drinking is too risky for that. And the amount of energy that you can get from it is very limited compared to be able to, you know, go in the Times Square and feed off the energy of the excess radiated energy of 500,000 people at one time. You can't drink 500,000 people's blood, and you probably definitely get a disease that way.
That's right. No doubt.
Practically, from my perspective, it's not an efficient form of vampirism. And metaphysically, it also has a lot of elements such as, like, you can't, if you drink human blood, there is connections of energy, but it dies very quickly. So I was actually, I do a ghost tour in Paris. That's what I do during the summer months. And I was actually talking to a nurse about this last night. She didn't know I was Father Sebastian making fangs, and in the vampire community, I keep the two separate. But it was really interesting to have her go, you know, I put my fangs on, and she's like, "Do you know anybody that drinks blood?" And I'm like, "I've met a few."
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh my God, that's so dangerous." And when I hear that consistently from medical professionals, I know what my concerns are. So I don't encourage, like, young kids to go out and drink blood, but if they're in a couple and adults and consenting adults, you know, what you do in your bedroom is really your business.
Yeah. Now, the fangs that you make, Father Sebastian, are they the type that fit over their teeth, or do you, like, file them down?
Oh, I don't file any teeth.
Okay.
I'm not a dentist, even though my grandfather was an orthodontist and my aunt is a practicing dentist.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of continuing my family tradition in a little bit of a weird way.
My
grandfather would roll over in his grave. The teeth that I make are very much like a prosthetic. I trained as a dental technician as an apprentice under an oral surgeon, for about 2 years. And he taught me basically a lot of what I needed to know to become a professional fang smith, is what my trade is called. And what we do is we make a mold of the tooth and make a cap out of acrylic, very similar to what you would do for a cap or a bridge or a denture.
Okay.
And it fits right over the tooth, and you can remove it, so vampires can have day jobs too.
That's right, exactly. Now, why do they do that? Why do they like to have these pointy teeth? Well, he's still there? Nope, we have lost Father Sebastian. So let's get Tom back in there and make the call and get back to him. He is in France, by the way, and that's a long, long haul away. So. We'll get him back. But you know what? I have no idea of the incredible scope of people who get these vampire teeth. There's a company, I think I talked about this on Halloween some time ago. There's a dentist in the United States. He's no longer a practicing dentist. He now makes teeth. Like Bill, it's called Billy Bob Teeth. And he's made a living of doing this. And a truly unbelievable situation where he makes these teeth. People are buying them. I think he sells a million of these a year, a million teeth a year. And, you know, it costs like $9, $10, $12 a piece. He's doing very, very well. But these things look real, and they fit over your mouth. And, you know, during Halloween, of course, people buy them all the time. But, you know, in terms of day-to-day living, they take them right off. So that's something that Father Sebastian does, where he makes these vampire-style teeth. And let's go back to him. We've got him back. See, they don't want you talking, Father, for some reason, but you're back with us.
The controversy.
That's right. Anyways, we're talking about the teeth and that they kind of like fit right over Yeah, but why do they like to have the pointed teeth?
Well, the thing is that the vampire archetype is such an incredible element of our modern culture. You know, we've created our own version of an ancient mythology through Hollywood. Just like it's, you know, vampires in a way are have the same effect as superheroes. They're modern gods. And when someone can take something that's so tangible and experience it, and I've discovered that fangs represent four basic things for people, in addition to being able to relate to a mythology that they find very compelling. First, the experience of having fangs is kind of like being in Fight Club. When you have your fangs, we joke around and call it Fang Club sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like being a member of a secret society because you've gone through this experience. And I've kind of made it almost a ceremony and rite of passage to get fangs. So when people come to me and they get fangs, they trust me to do something because they know someone else survived when I did it and that they're having a very good time. So first, they represent a connection to your primal nature. So when you are connected to your primal nature, you are bringing this animalistic energy out inside of you. The fangs are so related to wolves and bears and these predators that it kind of gives this kind of natural connection to the deep, deep part of a reptilian brain. And that's why I make people growl or howl like wolves when we make fangs. It's part of the ritual, the initiation.
I bet you've got some incredible video on this.
If you check my YouTube page out, you'll see very funny scenes of people. And it's a lot of times I'll make people who don't even speak English, and I don't speak their language, and it just works. It's a vibe that we have.
You also do a very good job making the fangs. I mean, I don't know how long it took you to perfect it, but I mean, you do very, very well making these things.
Well, I appreciate that.
The people that go through this, this is worldwide, of course, but is there any special area, Father Sebastian, on this planet that is more prevalent than somebody else, some other place? I mean, like, is Transylvania a hot spot for this, or Buffalo?
The two places about things that seem to be the hot spots, it moves around. It's like a trend. When I first got into it, it was New York City because Susan Walsh disappeared and the whole world descended on New York City's vampire scene. And the New York City vampire scene was kind of like the hot spot of it, where it was really the main centrifuge of the vampire scene. It was New York City is the Rome of vampires in a way. And then the second thing is, when I started making fangs, it kind of brought people out of the underground. I mean, you've got your role players, like Vampire the Masquerade players, but Vampire the Masquerade, even though it's an incredible storyline and it's a great role-playing game experience, is not reality. It's a game. And it's very interesting to see members of the vampire community kind of get uncomfortable with the gaming because they think it kind of mocks them in a way.
Well, that's a good point. Father, hold on. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to be right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, do take advantage of our 10 days free offer. If you would like to watch our television show Beyond Belief, simply go to coasttocoastam.com, click hosts, and then click the television button there, and there you are. It's a program we're very proud of, but also you get to look at all the incredible videos out there that are available simply by signing up. 10 days free, and just simply go to our website again, click hosts at the top, and then the TV button opens up. Welcome back with Father Sebastian as we talk about vampires, vampirism, and of course he is a fangs smith as well. Fascinating career there, Father.
Yeah, it's been quite an adventure over the 20 years I've been making fangs since I made my mom, who was my first customer.
I'm sure you've met all kinds of people, nice ones, crazy ones, you name it. You've probably met them all.
And, you know, a lot of people think all my customers are goths. In fact, it's only about 5% that are gothic.
the people that come and get fangs are people that you would never expect. The most normal moms, the most normal daughters, the most normal school teachers, and they have this dark side or this, you know, kind of Promethean flame inside of them, and they come in and get these teeth, and it's hilarious. You'll be in my fang shop in the East Village in New York when I'm making fangs on Halloween, and these people will come in, and they'll sit there holding those cheap scarecrow ones that you buy in the Halloween stores, and they'll go, "Can you help me?" It's so cute. And I make their fangs, and to finish what fangs represent, is, you know, we went over the primal nature, but they're also a mask that's internal. It's like having a mask in your mouth and the same psychology that goes along with the mask. And it's very interesting because one of the most bizarre things is when I'm done with the fang, I don't let them see what the fangs look like. And when they look in the mirror, it's the final touch of the ritual of transformation, which I call the white light. And that element of the mirror experience is the reaction that you get when people look in the mirror with the fangs for the first time keeps me going and keeps me revitalized with excitement every time I see people do this. And when they look in the mirror, I've seen people cry, I've seen people laugh, I've seen people jump up and down. One guy stared in the mirror for 3 hours. It's incredible what they do. And it really, you can see a transformation. Something is complete with them, or they've evolved, or it's just a whole variety of different responses. However, it keeps me very focused and dedicated to what I do. I really go into a flow state when I make tea. And it's very therapeutic for me to do that, to be in that state. And as my partner Victor said, who's listening now, and he's a big fan of yours, by the way.
Tell him hi.
He loves you. He was like, "You're going on Coast to Coast?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, So hi to Victor. And what happened was I've met so many amazing people. Like right now I'm in a law firm in Paris at my lawyer's place, and I met my lawyer through the Jamaican fang.
That's amazing. So so he bought some fangs too?
Well, she did, yeah.
She did. Okay.
Basically, what they call my clan the Sabretooth Clan, which are people that I make fangs for, the Sabretooths. And if you go through that white rite, as we call it, which involves the rite of the mirror and some secret elements, which I don't want to make public, except one thing, which we call the oracle, the whole transformation experience, it doesn't make you a vampire. That's the first thing I want to make clear, okay? But it does awaken something in a lot of people. And that is really what's, that's just what's awesome about it for me and the client, because it's this energy exchange. We have a common experience, and I bond with these people, and I consider them family. You know, when they go through this white rite and they become a member of this family, like, for example, I brought 28 members of my Sabretooth clan to Prague last year where I did the show with you.
That's and, right. I remember that.
Oh, that was a trial trying to find a landline. And when I came to do the show, I went home, I got some rest, and then I did the show with you. I came back at lunch. The 28 people who never met each other before because they were my fang clients, it was like a powwow.
Yeah.
For my clients, we're still together having lunch from the night before. No one left each other. They felt like a family. It was incredible.
That's amazing. That really is incredible. Do you find, Father, that this community, like you were just saying, seems to be so tightly knit? They develop new friends and camaraderie. But is it during certain time periods? I mean, is Halloween the biggest period for you when you're the busiest, for example?
Sure. It's also when we get the most fresh blood. I set up in a Halloween store in New York City called Halloween Adventure. It's at 104 mm-hmm. Fourth Avenue. And I have like a little secret room in the back. And I've been doing fangs there since 1995. Every year I go back for October. And it is extremely busy because it's the number one Halloween store. But you got to find me. You can't just like go into the store and get fangs. You got to know where I am, and you got to knock on the door. It's kind of a secret thing. And we call it the Sabretooth Emporium for the Sabretooth clients. And it's really amazing. I mean, I'll sit there with a detective, a mom, and a guy from Harlem, and these three people from three different worlds, while they're all in this 10x10 little cubicle getting fangs. And then at the end of the fangs, we have a party for them and a little birthday celebration and everything like that. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Sebastian, you got gimmicks for your job. But I'll tell you, my gimmicks are a lot of fun. And they do have a deeper spiritual sense for me, because I would, you know, a lot of people go, oh, you're selling out by going on TV and all this stuff. And I'm like, look, I'm an artist, like a tattoo artist. And I'm not selling out. I'm rocking out. Because I can never make physically enough things to do anything that would be controversial, in my opinion, with that. I physically just can't do it. So everybody that gets fangs is very special in regards to having that experience that we share. And there is this family sense that is just remarkable. For example, I had a lady come in 1997 at noon. She got her fangs. And then at 6 o'clock at night, she left the city, and I met another guy, her friend. He left the city. They got in a car accident outside the city. They got out. They both had fangs, and they didn't call the police. They did their insurance on the side at the diner. They ended up falling in love, and now they have a daughter who's 17, and I don't make fangs for anybody under 18 unless their parents come and get fangs first.
Okay. That's smart.
The fangs, parents got to get the fangs too. And she brought the daughter in, the girl that was born from my business. She brought the girl in to introduce me to her this last October. And I was like, so you were born from my business? And she goes, yeah. And I'm like, all right, you owe me a coffee.
That's something. How long does it take you to make some fangs?
Depends on the style. It usually takes about 30 minutes if it's in a everything goes right, upwards to an hour for prepare. So there's a lot of time to talk and get to know the client and hang out and get to know each other.
Now, we were talking about hot spots around this planet. Let's talk a little bit more about that. So where are they?
Right now, it's France is the big place, and it's kind of dying down because I think I've made everybody that needs fangs here. And it was New York when I first started. Of course, New Orleans is up and down. Halloween, of course, in New Orleans is incredible. And the hotspot is France, and it's just starting in Germany. I remember when I went to Germany right after 9/11, I left New York City. I was watching the towers, you know, go down from Brooklyn, and I just knew that 1984 was coming. I could feel the air change, the energy frequency shift. And I was like, I got to get out of the state because I was scared that an Orwellian state was going to be born. And, you know, we were just talking about that earlier in the show. I was listening and I'm like, yeah, well, see? And I moved to Germany and they didn't want fangs. Nobody wanted fangs. Now today, I was at a festival a couple of weeks ago in Leipzig. That's the largest Gothic event in the world called Wave Gothic Treffen. And I turned down 150 people. Because I just couldn't make enough fangs.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. You know, when we got disconnected, there's a doctor who has left his dental practice, and he makes what is called Billy Bob teeth, Father. You know, mm-hmm. A little plastic, not as elaborate as what you do. But, I mean, he's mass producing these. Can you do that with what you do?
I'm in negotiations now to make that happen, but I think I need to make a couple steps first. Because the technology that I want to use and the way that I want to do it, it still needs to be personal, and it has to be custom. And Billy Bob teeth are cool, but you kind of put a little putty in there and you put them in.
It's more like a party thing.
Correct. My integrity tells me to make the best experience. It's not just a product, it's an experience. So being a primal connection to your primal nature, being a mask, and it's also a magic trick. Like being a magician. So these are the things that people get after they experience after they get the fangs.
That's
so
right.
The fangs are an experience. And getting the fangs is an experience. So people's lives have changed after they've gotten fangs. I've seen people, kind of awaken to a whole new side of themselves, and they've changed their whole lives. And some people get better at their lives. Couples bond, couples separate. It's very interesting. It's a very wild energy to see what would happen after someone kind of awakens. And that's where the vampire community got the word awakening, was actually from my fang business when I would watch people look in the mirror for the first time. So the hot spots really go with kind of like, if there's 10 people that go through the experience and they know 10 people each that know the experience, it kind of builds on itself. Like Germany, I mean, the people are fighting tooth and nail to get teeth now, because I've made a certain number of people fangs who know the same people. And the vibe, it's a very word of mouth business. I don't talk about it. But I'm not ready to mass produce them. And when I do, I'm going to do it right. And I'm going to do it in a way that the experience that I'm providing now will be as strong as possible with the new style of production.
Necropolis, an ancient cemetery, and of course the name of Zach Bagans' new television show that's coming up. And you are going to appear on it. You made fangs for him.
Yeah, I did. He was awesome. I run the Paris Mysteries of Paris Ghost Tour.
Okay.
I do this ghost tour in Paris. And it's something I do Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. And I'm writing a book called Mysteries of Paris that comes out Valentine's Day next year. And it's 99 Mysteries of Paris. And they called me up to try to help out with this show. And nobody's done an esoteric or paranormal investigation of Paris. Because the French have a very different perspective on esotericism and paranormalism. And Zach took the challenge up. He came here to investigate. And they contacted me, and we met at Place de Concorde, which is the old Place de Revolution. He was kind of like not sure what to make of me at first. And then we just hit it off. We started talking about life after death and our perspectives on things. And I showed him my things, and he was like, I need those. And I was like, well, I just happen to have my fang kit with me. What a coincidence. And I spent the afternoon with them, going to a couple locations. And then we went to a bar in Paris called Black Dog, which my partner owns. We went downstairs and we did the white light with them.
Part of the attraction of being a vampire is this feeling of immortality, Father, that they literally can live on forever. The people who are acting out the role of being vampires, do they have that feeling?
Acting out the role and being immortal are two different things. And one of the things that, you know, because of my experiences with my fang clients and their desire, majority for immortality, that's really what drives the core of a living vampire in that philosophy. And even if it's not possible to at least strive for it and live as an immortal, in an immortal-minded attitude and perspective, is basically very important for a lot of my fang clients. And I've collected information on esoteric forms of immortality and real-life forms of immortality. And the core of the vampire ideal is this immortality. So I wrote a book about an equilibrium between the two called Sanguinomicon, which is linked on my profile on the on coasttocoastam.com. And Sanguinomicon is published by my favorite publisher, Wiser Books. And it deals with the balance of the night side and day side and the equilibrium between that. And I've been influenced by all these different esoteric systems that deal with vampirism. And I kind of tried to pick the best that would apply to people that could really apply it, that could go out there and attempt it as much as possible. So the quest for immortality is certainly possible on a spiritual perspective if you pursue that. But what's even more interesting is that I'm looking at children walking down the street today, and these kids, I pointed out to a lot of my fang clients and a lot of my people on my tour, because I do stories on alchemy and the immortality, the elixir of immortality, there'll be a kid walking down, or I'll pick a kid on the tour and I'll be like, yo, you could probably live to 1,000 years old. The kids that are alive today have that opportunity because of the advancing of technology.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, my dad told me, it's certainly possible that I've just missed or you've just missed immortality.
So true. It is so true. I mean, if you can take care of yourself and be very smart about it, you know, you could go a long, long way. Look at George Burns. And you know, he smokes cigars every day, for crying out loud. You know,
one of my favorite actors.
What's next in pop culture in the vampire scene? I mean, you know, we've had these great television series and movies, Twilight, True Blood, the old ones, of course. What's next?
Well, that's a very good question, because one of the things that I keep telling people is the apocalypse did happen. It occurred. And people look at me like with two heads. And as we know in Greek, people that are familiar with these things, it's not the biblical apocalypse that we're talking about. We're talking about a change of perception and reality. And what's next, I think, is you get to become the character that you look up to. And that's one of the things about my business, is you get to become what your fantasies are and then make them tangible in reality. So, for example, you know, video games, you get to become the hero. With wearing fangs and the philosophy that surrounds that and the experience and the techniques, what's next? You know, Twilight's over, thank God. True Blood, I guarantee, is winding down. And that was an era of, you know, True Blood being the adult kind of sexy version, while Twilight was the opposite of that for teeny boppers. And it hit two complete audiences that would never be interested in vampires before. So the old vampire fans, like Anne Rice fans and Dracula fans, the A generation and the Dracula generation, or the Buffy generation, can still relate to these things, but they, you know, every generation has a vampire. I'm hoping and I'm praying that Anne Rice's novels become a series like Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, all of these people that were in True Blood and Twilight get to meet Lestat again, or get introduced to Lestat, the Lion Court, the beloved vampire. And I got to talk to Anne Rice in New York at the Comic-Con.
Yeah. Great person.
Last year. Awesome. And yeah, she's making a great revival of herself, which I think is great. You know, she's really out there meeting people. She was really dormant for a while, but she really is the queen of the damned. She brought vampirism to the world
in a
way that redefined the genre.
Father, we're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take phone calls with you as we talk about vampirism. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.